step out of. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 421. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP Hornsby. No, KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. You can also listen to us on KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, July 12th, 2017. On the show today, our very dear friends at Hyde Park Theater are going to come on and talk to us about their show, The Moors. And also later on, we'll talk to the stage presence players and their production of Almost Maine. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, Manchester, and Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Every door to me. Keep
those I want from me, children of Israel. La 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 la. Well,
that's so funny because we were singing. I was singing.
Well, that's exactly before. That is exactly what we're going to talk about. But first of all, before I do that, I just need to check in with Nick Squared because my God, we haven't been all together in a while.
We're here.
I know. We're all here.
We're here. And
accounted for.
Nick Mayo, I need you to just talk into that microphone or put on headphones so we know that because you're very quiet.
I am right here.
we've stripped you of your own microphone. So
you know
just,
what? It's the generosity of our guests in the studio. I want to hear their voices.
Oh, my
Well,
Lord.
You're lucky today. I actually have on some height, so you're not ducking as low.
Right.
So that is alluding to the power of radio and knowing that Nicole Shiro is a shorty. And there you go. So Nicole Shiro, how are you? You were not well last week.
No, I was sick and it stunk. you know, when you're like in bed and you want nothing on and you don't even want to read or do anything, but just be in bed.
Don't know what that's about.
That stunk.
Don't know what that's about. Well, we're glad you're feeling better. Assuming you're feeling better.
I am. Yes.
So let's introduce the folks that are here. And I will tell you that when you speak, you need to get close to their microphone. They're all very afraid of the microphone as if they're not performers. so we have, in no particular order here, Christy Treitler.
Hello.
Hello. We have Jerry Giuliano.
Hello, Austin.
Lisa Page.
Hola, Austin.
Hola, Austin. TJ Condit.
Hi, how are y'all?
Jonathan Spear.
Hello.
And Mr. Ken Webster.
Hello.
Yay, well, we're all here and accounted for. So, indeed, we were playing from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Hide Every Stone From Me, whatever it's called.
Keep All My Keys From Me.
Keep All My Keys From Me. Please take all my beer from me. Nearer My God to Thee. It's all of them. There was some controversy in New Zealand about them changing the lyrics to that song.
Down Under went down.
Down Under went down.
We talked about this and you weren't here a few weeks ago. And Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the tweets back.
This just happened this week.
There was a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was like,
did the original, the Tim Rice version happen 2 weeks ago? I missed it. I'm sorry.
No,
okay.
But I was about to say, I loved his tweets. He was so classy in him. Like, why are you changing?
He was. So then we won't belabor the point since we already talked about it on the show. He shows you.
No,
how
but
much
what happened this week?
But Andrew Lloyd Webber just weighed in.
Andrew Lloyd
week.
Webber, all he did was he came in and said, yeah, Tim's right.
Yeah, what he said.
So when
did Tim pipe in? Because it first started with Andrew.
No, it started with Tim.
No, the tweets that I read when we were on the show were Andrew.
Let's not bicker and fight over. But the original one was Tim Rice.
Yes, as the lyricist.
Yes.
Okay.
But anyway,
pull up the Andrew Lloyd Rice and let y'all know.
Let's not bicker and try. But you know what I do before we get started with the main discussion? I do want to. We don't talk about this enough on the air because we need to. Offstage and On the Air has a Facebook presence.
Yes.
We also have a Twitter presence. I would love to see conversations happening on our Facebook page. That'd be sort of fun.
Also, it happens with ourselves.
Co-op Radio has a Facebook page, a Twitter handle, and an Instagram. Oddly enough, all three of those are Co-op Radio. So there you go.
It's not hard, and there's lots of good stuff on there. They are active.
So why don't we get all social media? Let's hashtag everything.
It is the future.
Like it with a thumbs up.
Yeah, hashtag the Facebook.
You can even do a heart. I would go with a heart.
Yeah.
Let's go with a heart. So we did have one opening at Lincoln Center of Pipeline this month. This week. Did y'all read the reviews?
I did. I want to see it.
One thing,
I want to see it too, although the Times review wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great.
No, but that's one of those reviews where it goes I still wanted to see it.
I do too. So Pipeline...
Because it sounded like it was more of a personal thing, not than it was the piece of work. Mm-hmm.
Well, Pipeline refers to the school-to-prison pipeline, talking about how, children of color, black children specifically, are treated differently in school, and they end up finding their way into prison, and it's really institutionally... It's almost mandated, as it were. And this is a family of color that has money, so they decided to protect their children and send them to private school so that they don't have to deal with the public school in New York City and try to get rid of this school-to-prison pipeline. Guess what? It doesn't work. The child is still overly disciplined and ends up...
There's an amazing documentary that was out, nominated for an Oscar this year, called 13th.
Yes.
That really...
Right in the microphone. In the microphone, please.
And the director, she was nominated for Oscar for that.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And it talks about this whole... prison, school to prison, and how it started. It's the 13th Amendment, that slavery is still how it's written in there. It's very interesting,
and
but
it
goes along with
all
this.
It's profitable. That's what it all boils down to. It's all about money.
Yeah.
You know, they see it as a cash cow.
And when you see it, it's just mind-boggling.
Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this play was written by Dominique Morisseau, and it seems really, really, really powerful. They call it an emotionally immersive approach, asking us to experience the profound feelings and exasperation that overtake a mother with a free-floating guilty conscience about her only child. Her child is played by Namir Smallwood, and her husband is, the woman, the mother, is Karen Pittman.
All I gotta say is Lincoln Center Theater does such amazing work, and they are able to do such amazing work because of being state and government funded, but also Andre Bishop, Ira Weitzman, and the whole group at Lincoln Center should be models for the rest of our country on how to present new work and champion the arts within a larger institution. They are phenomenal, and the fact that this play exists in such a timely way at Lincoln Center is... I am in awe and so happy that exists.
We talk about this incessantly, and we'll just jump in there one more time. In an era that we're living right now where we're losing funding right and left, federally, in our case, the state, fortunately, our city is still relatively generous with the arts, as best that they can be under the circumstances.
And these guys take it very seriously that when they receive government and state funding, that it's their responsibility to give something to the people that is immediate and for immediate consumption. Do you know what I mean?
It's creating work that says something. It's not about putting out work just to make a buck.
Right. And it's giving the youth something to do. That's what people don't understand. When you remove arts from the schools, you're taking something productive for the kids to do. Now you've got a bunch of kids running around. I mean, my problem as a kid was I was hyper. And my family didn't put me anything. They didn't have money to put me into stuff. But can you imagine had they put me into things? Now, luckily, I had a good community, but there's a lot of kids out there. They want this opportunity. Natural-born actors, natural-born talent. Now, they're, in this day and age, they're taking that away.
That coupled with the fact that not only does it give them something to do, which is fine and dandy, but also an education in the arts has proven that it increases cognitive skills, test scores, everything else.
Excel in math and science in the world of technology.
Character.
Seems like
present yourself.
Beneficial.
Discipline.
There you go.
Discipline.
It can almost be life changing. I mean, community theater for me. I mean, I was a pretty inward kid, and probably if my mom didn't force me to do some theater when I was like 8 one summer and literally forced me, like, get out of the car and go in there, and I would have ended up a stalker or something, because it really,
I heard you already, you're not, are you still
it really brought me out of my shell. It can change you for the better.
Well, Bravo Lincoln Center.
Bravo Lincoln Center. And the last thing I'll say about Pipeline itself is the issue that the critic had, which was Ben Brantley, is around basically the writing of the piece more than anything else. He said the Pipeline is more confused in its depiction of characters' confusions, and not every scene is equally resonant or convincing. It sounds like the show will be really great after maybe it does another, maybe the next time it's on, it's going to be excellent. There you go. That's the end of that story.
Yeah.
Nicole, you had some Blue Man Group information you wanted to share.
I found that kind of interesting. Blue Man Group was bought or sold, whatever way you want to look at it, to one Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fun. I saw them years ago in Atlanta, and they're phenomenal. I can kind of see them getting
great,
in there.
And I get the whole, like, immersion.
And they're very cirque-y.
Yeah.
But they're not flying from trapeze while they're playing there. I mean,
that'd be kind of fun to watch.
They're actively moving. It's a lot of acrobatics.
The reason Blue Man Group co-founder said, Chris Wink said, we've been around for a while, and I think we've done a pretty good job of keeping our shows fresh, but we've had a harder time getting new projects off the ground and a harder time getting ourselves into parts of the world where we'd like to have a bigger presence.
Does it say how it's going to manifest itself? Will Blue Man Group start showing up at Cirque shows, or will they still remain separate? Because they're similar, but
they're very different, even though they're in essence. The deal is Cirque du Soleil, which, did you know Cirque du Soleil is now part owned by a Chinese conglomerate? It's not all the Canadians. So part of the problem, this is going to give Blue Man Group access to all of their distribution. They wouldn't really go in there. There will be no co-mixing of the brands.
Okay, mm-hmm. There you go.
You will not be seeing Blue Man Group by Cirque du Soleil.
Thank God.
Cirque du Soleil. There is no need for that. We want to keep their autonomy.
That's a shame, because they would really combine well together.
Thank you. That's what I think, too.
But then they went on to say is going to expand expand Blue Man Group to China. They really have been wanting to get into China. I don't know why. But there was a really cool history of the timeline and a whole bunch of cool stuff that Chicago
really interesting
paper did. I thought that was interesting. So
that is interesting. You know what else is interesting?
What?
Miss Bette Midler, the divine Bette, took 2 weeks off.
Yeah,
Donna Murphy took over.
Yeah, Donna's everything, and Donna's also doing all the Tuesday nights, but one now
right.
After this.
So, yeah, but interesting, great reviews for her. So
Donna Murphy. You want to talk about Broadway royalty? Come on.
Well, except the public doesn't agree. They did a healthy almost $1 million at the box for the week, but that's $1.4 million less than it is with the divine Miss Bette.
But also, I was having this conversation with Nick. I was shocked. If you had bought tickets and Donna Murphy was in the show, they actually called you and said, would you like her? We want to make sure you realize Donna Murphy is in the show, not Bette Midler, and you can A, get a refund, or B, we'll give you a discount on your ticket.
Yeah.
That's going to be where some of the money comes in, which I thought was awesome. Nick and I had a conversation about
that. It's kind of awesome, I'll tell you. I have such mixed emotions. And Broadway has, since its inception, been, in many cases, a vehicle for stars to show their wares. I mean, it's been forever. But it still sort of pisses me off, because the jewel for that show, evidently, is the show itself.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So that's it.
Yep.
Nick Mayo's nodding.
Yep.
Doesn't work on the radio.
Anyway, maybe one day he'll get it.
I thought that was interesting. So that's why I wanted to talk about it. And let's talk about Judi Dench. What about Judi Dench?
First of all, she looks like she's angry but stoic here in this photo. I'm sorry.
You can be angry and stoic at the same time.
I kind of love it.
She was on a panel, and she quote unquote says, the TV culture produces actors with, quote, no kind of discipline. And just went off about young actors and their missing vital training. And I was like, girl, you go. So the comments were made in The Actor's Apprenticeship, which is a documentary by one actor over in England, Luke Dale. And it's looking at the demise of the rep and its impact on the actors, on the acting industry.
The rep. What do you mean by the rep? You mean doing things in repertory?
The demise of the, like, the reputation.
Oh, the reputation.
Yeah. So Judy went on about there's too much, young actors get too much exposure. And she goes on about, like, she used Britain's Got Talent as an example. But she went on and on. And some of the stuff was really, like, awesome. And then they talked about, actually, the importance of repertory theater.
So how do we feel about that statement?
I completely agree. And, you know, I'm not an older person. I'm not a younger person. I'm right in the middle.
You're a medium person.
Yeah, you know, Lisa, just Page, a person. Lisa Page said. But no, I agree because, like, for example, I look at someone like Viola Davis. And everybody would think, oh, she just became popular with How to Get Away with Murder. But if you go back and you look at her rap sheet, I mean, if that's what you want to call it.
No, you don't.
We call
it a resume.
But yeah, if you go back and look, I mean, she started in small plays. And most of these people like her who've been around a long time.
She went to Juilliard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, but they come from small beginnings where they get in these community plays and they get in these small, where you get intimate with characters.
So you're thinking that the new rash of actors
don't get that. They just want to look cute and poppy and chewy gummy and no.
How do you feel about that? I'm curious. Do you feel that we're losing our ability to train and discipline our new troop of actors?
Well, a lot of people complain that all these actors from Great Britain are coming here and stealing our parts. but the training there is just amazing.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So it's not a surprise that we're seeing so many British actors in American films.
Well, they turned this around and did all talk about the lack of a repertory system and that is one of the most important places where people can learn.
Well, you can't have a repertory system when they take the funding from it.
That's exactly what always comes
back. Yeah, you know, so, you know.
Well, and you can't do shows in rep if you don't have an audience, if an audience won't come to it. And that's one of the problems we have here, I think, in Austin.
The one quote she said, though, that I kind of was like, well, that was good. She said, it's all very well being at drama school and giving your end of term shows, but then you have to learn to make mistakes and you have to learn what it is to play the different sizes of theaters and you somehow have to sharpen up your act. Mm-hmm. And
well, that's
this
true.
Is what you're all getting. I was loving this and I really want to see this documentary.
We've talked about that, especially within, as it relates to musicals, and Nick and I have talked about this with technology, specifically in amplification. We'll take that the actors don't train their instrument anymore because we rely on microphones.
I work extensively teaching high school and college students and directing at the college level, and we don't get to do so much of the work because we spend so much time on just opening your mouth. And how to hear your voice. So we do not get to the majority of the training that we could because of that very thing. Mm-hmm. And that just goes back to, you know, what she's saying, which is the importance of training.
And the importance of getting back to the basics. And that's important.
Well, it's funny you guys were talking about that. I saw a performance like a week or two ago with Norm Lewis and Carly Carmelo doing Sweeney Todd. And they were talking about how in this space they're using no microphones, mm-hmm. and it is no amplification, and that they all, thank God they had the training that they had, and that they're using all these different tools that they never thought they would be using again. And I was all like, whoa, they weren't talking about the show, they were talking about that, and I got excited.
Yay.
Yep.
So front page of the art section of the New York Times was a whole thing around disabled actors, and specifically a show that's happened in the Manhattan Theater Club called Cost of Living, starring two differently abled actors, a man with cerebral palsy and a woman who's a double amputee, and some of the challenges that they go through. And interestingly enough, so they both are in wheelchairs. So I found it sort of funny that they said the Manhattan Theater Club had to only do minor accommodations and didn't cost any money. They had to build two ramps, which that's going to cost a little bit, I think. But they talk about the choreography backstage because these actors are in wheelchairs. Interestingly enough, in their day-to-day life, they are not in wheelchairs. She uses prosthetics. Wow. And he does not need a wheelchair.
That was probably harder to coordinate then.
Well, they had to learn, and they have to. One of the things that the woman, the double amputee, let me give you their names, so we're just not saying the woman and the man, the double amputee and the guy with cerebral palsy. I'm going to come up with it. Kathy Sullivan, she's a bilateral above the knee amputee since birth, and Greg Mosgala, who has cerebral palsy. These two actors do it, but they also talk about the choreography backstage. So they're in powered wheelchairs, as I mime a non-powered wheelchair.
That's your manpower. Come on. But,
but so she says it was really strange for her because it's sitting in a wheelchair, it uses different muscles than walking. And she has to do a lot of exercises. There is also a turntable on stage, which has... an interesting challenge for people.
How
in
the exciting.
Wheelchair.
I haven't seen this, Lisa. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. So it's actually really interesting. So check it out. It's in, there'll be a link on our site, offstageonair.com.
Can I say something really quick about
Please.
That, Lisa? Just because it's timely, this Sunday, if there are any differently abled or disabled actors who are interested in a community of differently abled or disabled actors, this Sunday here in Austin, Tilt, the theater company for the disabled, is holding auditions for their season.
Right.
So if you're inspired by that and you are a disabled actor, you can visit tiltperformance.org for more information about those auditions for their season.
Right.
So here in Austin, something we should be proud of is that organization.
We've had Tilt Performance Group on this show several times, and they do really, really great work.
They're
and we will remember to say that again when we talk about our local stuff.
Cool.
So, speaking of differently abled, Titanic.
I don't even know what
Titanic,
to say.
Titanic the musical.
It's a great segue.
They are announcing their first ever UK tour.
Oh, wow. How are they going to get across that ocean?
Not a big fan of this show, but I find it interesting. So they're opening April 12th. At the Mayflower Theater in Southampton, which is the dock where the Mayflower sailed from.
Wait a minute, isn't that the dock?
It's the same week of the 106th anniversary.
Are they going by cruise ship?
they
really have to travel by cruise ship.
No, they aren't.
No.
I think that would be like pushing the joke if they did.
Yeah,
like, really?
Yeah,
you know?
This whole thing
and I'm
seems
just
like
going to go out on a limb and say that they're probably not, they don't probably consider this a joke. Would be my guess.
Probably.
But then their first, after Southampton, they will go to Belfast, where the Titanic was constructed.
Built, that's right.
You knew that?
Yes, I
How did you know that?
Because I spent 2 weeks in Ireland with my job. Yeah.
So the other places they're playing is Cardiff, Glasgow, Birmingham. I'm trying to say it the way the English people do. Birmingham, Plymouth, and Nottingham.
Nottingham, Glasgow.
And it will finish at the Churchill Theatre in Bromley on July 21st, 2018, in the year of our Lord.
That's it. That's it. That's how they talk.
Cheers.
Lovely, lovely.
I'll tell you what, I saw it, I saw the original, and not a fan, although we're going to hear a little piece of music from it as we walk away, and it's a delightful song.
Well, it's Mori Jetson.
It is Mori Jetson.
Yeah, and he's the dude that wrote Nine, and Nine is a brilliant musical, so...
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Because if you write one brilliant thing, they're all brilliant.
All gold.
So something I've been meaning to talk about for a while. We talked about it on the show probably last year, but it's finally come out. We talked about the book, After Anna Tefka. It's a novel by Alexandra Silber, who played... originally, she played Hoddle. It's like, is it Hoddle or is it... I get Hoddle and Kava mixed up all the time. So she played Hoddle. And then in the UK, she switched over to Seidel. She wrote a book chronicling what happens to Hoddle's life after, to refresh everybody's memory. She's the one that has the husband that was the rabble rouser and got put
Perchik.
Perchik, who got put into prison in Siberia. And so she was on the train. She's sang Far From the Home I Love. I just started crying thinking about that song. All right.
I could cry about all those songs. That would make me sit and think about it.
So anyway, she writes about her life and their life after at that point, and it's a novel. And it's very interesting. And I've been listening to several different interviews with her, and she also, there's some parallels, because she moved to London her father passed away. Glasgow. Right. And her father passed away. And so there was this whole thing about she was 18 years old. Hava is 18 years old and she leaves her family, presumably assuming that they will never see one another again. And one would surmise that they probably didn't, but read the book and find out.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's called After Anna Tefka, a novel inspired by Fiddler on the Roof. Has everybody seen Fiddler on the Roof? Has anybody not seen it?
Everyone can stay.
Crickets. Everybody can stay.
Okay, crickets, chirp.
crickets. All right.
I saw it with Herschel Bernardi.
I saw it with Herschel Bernardi. When did you see it? 1969?
Later. It was in Austin. It was a touring show in Austin.
Oh, he toured with it later. So I saw it on Broadway. Herschel Bernardi, for those that don't know, is the third Tevye. So it was Zero Mostel, Topol, then Herschel Bernardi. And I don't really care who came after that, because that's when...
A bunch.
Nathan Lane.
So, Harvey and Alfred and Danny.
Oh, Harvey. Forgot about that one.
Our good friend... Michael Riedel's column this week talked about the upcoming tickets that are going to be hard to get. And I just want to sort of talk about these shows that are coming in, because I forgot. One is A Band's Visit, which was a sold-out performance last year at, where were they? At the Atlantic Theater Company. And it's about a small band that visits.
Yeah.
Aptly titled.
That's what it's called. I believe they went to visit Herschel Bernardi. Wait, not to backtrack, but Herschel Bernardi's son, what's his son's name? Nick? Yeah, you probably know.
Bernardi Jr.
Yeah, Herschel Bernardi Jr. was in the current. It's still playing, right? Fiddler?
Yes. Yeah, No, closed.
He was in the current and he was the understudy for Burstein, and I think he went on for, and he's got his dad's shoes.
Aww.
His Tevye shoes.
Aww. That's sweet.
Everything's about Fiddler today. That's great.
Yes.
All roads lead back to Anna Tefka.
Well, because it's tradition.
Whoa.
Wow.
See what I did just then? Okay, hold on. We got to get moving. And the other show that we need to watch out for is a little show called Mean Girls by Tina Fey. That's going to be good. So let's go out. Let's listen to a little bit of Titanic while we take a little break, shall we?
Yes.
Here we go, Titanic. Let's get on that ship. Let me aboard, call out my name. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP with me, Lisa Sheps, and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
It makes me laugh every single time. I just can't do it. We've been talking to a myriad of people that I'm not going to reintroduce right now, but one of those people is Mr. Ken Webster of Hyde Park Theater. Hi, Ken.
Good afternoon.
Before we start talking and take a quick little tangent, Lisa, while we were in a break, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 52.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm Christian Ortega.
What did you tell me?
39.
39. And you know what? I just accidentally pushed. So hold on. I got to re-cue it. And then we're going to see what it is. Here it is.
Ta-da!
39.
All right. I'm Christian Ortega.
I'm Graham Dalling. And we're with the National Theatre of Scotland. And you're listening to Offstage and on the Air
on KOOP HD1. Hornsby, Austin.
Okay, we are stuck across the pond today.
We are definitely a lot of Scotland.
You know, the only thing that would have made that better if it was Herschel Bernardi.
Or
bring it all home.
Or Herschel Bernardi Jr.
With his dad's shoes. So, Ken, you guys are doing a show called The Moors, which looks fascinating. Tell us about it.
It is. It's our 25th anniversary as a theater company.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
And all the plays we're doing this year are written by women playwrights.
Excellent.
We just finished doing, a few months ago, John by Annie Baker, and now we're doing The Moors by Jen Silverman. And in the fall, we're doing The Wolves by Sarah Delap.
Lovely. I don't know her work, but I love that it sounds.
She's brand wonderful. New. She was a finalist for the Pulitzer with her play The Wolves.
Oh, cool. And you're doing it. Well, so is it a large play? I know we're here to talk about The Moors, but I want to hear The Wolves. Is it a big play?
I need nine actresses who can pass for teenage soccer players.
That's Nicole and me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. We have a job, Nicole.
I did play soccer.
And a soccer mom.
That's me.
I wasn't a soccer mom.
We don't usually do casts.
Get in the minivan, Nicole.
I was so rough, they put me on the... let me play on the boys' team. They took me off the girls' team because I was all like, oh,
she's
I
tough.
Don't know. We're playing soccer, people.
So are you going to actually play soccer on your very large stage?
They mostly do their soccer warm-ups, and there's a little bouncing of the soccer ball, but it's mostly their... most of the play takes place during their warm-ups.
And are you directing?
I am, and there's a lot of crazy overlapping dialogue, nine people all... Yeah. Talking at the same time.
Oh, good. Well, I look forward to seeing it. Well, y'all have to come on when we get closer to that. So tell us about what you've got going on right now.
The Moors by Jen Silverman is a really, really wonderful play. It takes place in the Bronte sisters era.
Yes.
And it's not about the Brontes, per se.
But it's about sisters.
It is about sisters, and these two sisters who live on an estate in the Moors, they have hired a governess to come to the estate, although they have no children there.
Uh-huh. Well, so you know what? I see the logic behind that because I can really use a governess.
They are not the Bronte sisters, but they have a brother named Branwell, as the Bronte sisters did, their brother Branwell is a ne'er-do-well and deflowers virgins and drinks a lot of alcohol and runs up debts. And he's a big part of the show. And there's a fabulous character, Marjorie Mallory, the maid. She plays kind of two different maids. When she's the parlor maid, she's Marjorie. When she's the scullery maid, she's Mallory.
But they're the same character.
It's the same, okay. Yes. Also have some interspecies romance in the show.
Right, there's a dog involved.
Yes,
there not?
There's a mastiff. Yes. There's a mastiff played by a human and a moor hen played by a human, and they meet out on the moors and fall in love.
So do they look like dogs and hens or do they look like people?
They are dressed as humans with a little bit of costume magic.
Okay.
The moorhen's costume especially is very interesting.
Nick has a question because I see him like gearing up. But before that, can you define for our audience, because of course I know, what we mean by the moors when we say the moors?
It's a desolate place, craggy rocks and expansive land, and it's dangerous. The moors are so dangerous, and they talk about the moors in a lot of those novels from back in the day. Heathcliff and Kathy were out on the moors.
What attracted you to this and to Jen's work, just out of curiosity, as part of your 25th anniversary season? What about this one?
I have a really fabulous literary manager named Megan Thornton. And
we love our Megan Thornton.
Oh, yes.
Shout out to Megan.
And she submitted several plays that she thought we would like at Hyde Park Theater, and this was one of them. And it's really fantastic. It's a great opportunity for actors, and Silverman's a great storyteller, and the play is funny and sexy and scary, and there's a lot of anachronisms thrown in. And she also suggests in the play that there be no British accents. And some of the language is very modern and not really 1840s England, not the way they would have spoken.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's a really cool script, and there's a lot of surprises. It's kind of a mystery, and there's perhaps murder involved.
Skullduggery. Some skullduggery.
Yes.
How large is the cast?
Six.
Six. And can you name them off?
I believe I can remember all of their
without
names.
Without looking at notes?
They're fantastic. Jess Hughes and Catherine Grady play the sisters. Katie Kohler plays the governess, who starts to get worried when she finally catches on. There's not even a child here. Why am I here? Crystal Bird Caviel plays Marjorie, and she's fantastic. Dave Jakubik plays the Mastiff, and Lindsay Hearn Brustein plays the Moorhen.
Oh, there you go. You did it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I always hate it when people ask me questions about the people I don't have notes because I have a terrible memory. Like a steel sieve. You guys have already opened, have you not?
We opened last Thursday. We finished our first weekend. And we also did a show Monday at a theater camp for teenagers.
Oh, awesome.
Over at Southwestern University.
Good. Well, so tell us about that. How was that?
That was really fantastic. It's you know, when you do a show in town, if you have four or five theater people in the audience, that's going to improve the responsiveness of the audience.
Right.
But imagine 120 theater people.
So you basically toured with this then? So you took it to Southwestern?
A mini tour down to Southwestern.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I happen to know that 120 people won't fit in your theater.
No.
Not at one time.
Not at one time.
Maybe two times.
Well, they could, but it wouldn't be comfortable.
So that is awesome. And did you do a talk back?
We did, and that was a lot of fun also. And they really got into the romance between the Mastiff and the Moorhen.
I love that. That was actually my sorority name. The Mastiffs and the Moorhen. You don't want to know.
Tell us, Lisa. Tell us.
So it sounds like a lot of fun. Can we bring the kids to this? Sounds like maybe not.
Let's see. We've had some kids there. The language is not bad.
PG-13.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little stage violence, very well choreographed by Travis Dean.
Excellent. Well, so where can folks go to get more information about the show?
HydeParkTheater.org.
Well, great, Ken. Thank you so much. As always, you are welcome to come here any old time.
Oh, thank you.
We love
so much.
Having you here. That was Ken Webster of Hyde Park Theater and his production of The Moors. It's playing now through August 5th, which we didn't talk about, but I just did. For more information, you may visit HydeParkTheater.org. And we'll just keep it in the realm of sisters. Sister time.
That's what I call every Wednesday from 1 to 2.
Sisters.
Oh, my God. Sisters.
Don't you bet
he just gave you puppy dog eyes when he said that,
I know.
Too.
He's adorbs.
Well, we'll have to take him to White Christmas with us in December.
We will. So a couple of things we have to talk about locally. First of all, we wanted to have them on the show, but we were not able. Tex Arts out in Lakeway is doing a closer walk with Patsy Cline, starring
Patsy.
Lily Lane Stafford. Patsy Cline,
Patsy.
the English country singer.
The English Patsy Cline.
I don't know. Tyler Jones is always in there. He's always an Austin favorite. Megan Richard Wright is the director. It is happening July 14th through the 30th. For more information, tex-arts.org. Nick Mayo, have you been out to Tex Arts? Have you seen their theater?
I have not been out there, but I've been in contact with them.
Excellent. Has anybody else been out there here?
No.
Ken Webster?
I haven't been out to Tex Arts yet. I almost never leave Hyde Park Theater.
I hear you. Interestingly enough, Tex Arts was the very first guest on Offstage and on the Air.
I was about to say, were they the first or the second?
First,
so the very first.
Golf the Musical.
Four?
And except this was earlier, so it was three. bump, bump. We should know the dresser who came and talked to us last week or the week before closes at the Vortex this weekend. And on July 22nd, the millionth annual unified auditions are going to be happening at the Vortex. Ken, are you going to be there? Are you going to be looking at the auditions?
Right now, I'm trying to make sure that Megan can be there because I have auditions for.
Because she's smarter than you anyway.
She is. She is. She finds really good plays. We're having auditions for the Wolves on that day.
Oh, cool. She might be able to find some wolves.
Out on the moor?
I'm sorry?
Will the wolves be out on the moor?
No, they'll be on AstroTurf Field.
Which is synonymous with the moors. So the unified auditions are happening at the Vortex. I know that Ground Floor Theater will be there. And there's a long list of theater companies are going to be there to watch folks audition. Any of you actors going to be at those auditions?
I will not.
I'll ask you if you speak to get closer to the microphone.
It's a fantastic opportunity. Lots of directors.
It is.
I have not made my decision yet.
What day is that again?
It is a Saturday or Sunday. I think it's a Sunday.
I think it's 22nd, you said?
22nd.
That would be a Saturday.
It's a
Saturday. I will be in New Orleans. Sorry.
New Orleans. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm going with her.
Yeah, getting some beads and drinking some stuff and eating some food.
Okay. Well, the unified auditions are definitely worth going. I saw the list of theater companies that are going to be
represented there, and there's a lots of them.
Yeah.
Lots of them. And I know that Ground Floor Theater, which is a theater company that I'm most aware of, we're about to open up and start. We're actually casting for a show in September.
Yay!
Okay, today in theater history.
Today
in theater
history.
History.
That's our Lion King theater history theme song.
It hasn't left my head now for.
So, Ken, you and I will remember this. Back in 1895 is the birthday of one Oscar Hammerstein II.
Not to be confused with the first.
No. Right. Did such wonderful shows with Mr. Richard Rodgers like Oklahoma, The King and I, South Pacific. He also worked on a little show called Allegro with a new young and upcoming young man named Esteban Sondheim. Okay, speaking of Andrew Lloyd Webber, his new musical, Sunset Boulevard, opened in London starring Patti LuPone, who got...
That didn't go well.
Did not go well. Did not go well. So not well, in fact, that they replaced her with the current star of Sunset Boulevard,
Glenn Close.
That went better. They brought her back again.
Right. But I believe Patti LuPone started in New York and was fired in New York, wasn't she?
I don't know.
I think so.
No, it didn't go well.
I remember it was not a good...
In this, it says, following LuPone's less than stellar review from Frank Rich in the New York Times, Close is hired to play Norma Desmond in the American premiere in Los Angeles. So no, Patti LuPone did not play it in America.
I'm sure she's thrilled she made theater history for that today.
She is. Well, you know, she loves things like this. So I like this one. In the year 2000, and I remember in this house, and Charles Nelson Reilly, who here remembers Charles Nelson Reilly?
Oh, yeah. I do. Okay, we got some hands.
We had a couple people that didn't have their hands up. Do y'all not know who he was?
No.
He's passed away, hasn't he? Yeah. You would probably recognize him if you ever saw him, but he was best known, I think, for Center Square and Hollywood Squares.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
But he made his Broadway debut in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. He played Bud Frump.
Oh.
What?
It's so him. It's like it him is as so a him. Person, not
so if
really
you listen
a
to
character.
The original, if you listen to the original
recording,
thank you, Nicole, you'll hear that. 2006. Oh, what was I going to say about Charles Nelson Reilly? He celebrates his 50th year in showbiz and had a solo show in New York at the, in California. Called Save It for the Stage, The Life of Reilly.
Interesting.
Okay. It looks back at the life of the ascot-adorned actor from the fourth grade portrayal of Christopher Columbus to his Tony Award-winning role at as Bud Frump. 2006. Oh, Carrie Nye passes away. It's the anniversary of her death, and she founded the Williamstown Theater Festival. Today's birthday is Uncle Milton Berle, Jamie Sheridan, and Nicole's boy, Cheyenne Jackson.
Aww. Nicole, you have so many boys.
Can never have too many.
It is also the birthday of our last week's guest, Mr. Asaf Ronen. Tomorrow, Miss Ginger Morris's birthday.
Ginger!
Nick, what are you doing to celebrate that with her? Anything?
Making sure that her rehearsal starts on time.
And we are...
Best gift ever.
He's referring to Summerstock Austin, and they will be on our show in a few weeks.
Next week.
Steve Gridley's birthday is also tomorrow, and not a theater person, but a fellow classmate of mine in Leadership Austin, Miss Natalie Choate. So bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire.
And one thing I just need to talk about now because we didn't, and we're going to hear a little bit of this at the very end. Does anybody here listen to podcasts?
Yes.
Okay, so there is a brand new, I don't know why I didn't think of this, a musical done as a podcast.
Wow.
And it is called 36 Questions, and it is starring up-and-comer, where'd it go, Jonathan Groff. It's written by Duncan Schenck and Steve Sater. And it co-stars, what's her name? I don't know this person. It's in here somewhere. Anyway, and I've listened to, the first act came out. It comes out in three acts. I've listened to the first act, or most of the first act. I'm a little on the fence. But it tells the story of an estranged husband and wife and how they're, so I guess, assuming, going to get back together. But it talks about the 36 questions, which is part of an actual real study. And I'm going to see where it says where it took place. But it's a way to use these specific 36 questions to get to know one another.
I think they pulled it from Cosmo.
And I'll tell you. It's the social experiment of the 90s in which two people try to form a deep interpersonal connection using a specific list of questions. The woman in the show is Jessie Shelton. Should I know who she is?
Oh, yes.
I should? Okay, well, Nicole said yes.
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. I was making it up.
Okay. The one thing... part of me is trying to kick myself in the hiney because they don't follow the formula. Like, what happens at the top of every musical?
An overture.
Well, after the overture.
A number.
A musical number. So we don't hear the first musical number until 8 minutes in.
I won't see it.
Yeah, well, you won't because it's a podcast.
I won't listen.
Yeah. Well, you will be listening to the end of the show. So we've got to go because we have to have time to talk to our next guest. So we are going to go away listening to a little bit of Sunset Boulevard, and I do love the song. Here we go. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We just got finished talking to Ken Webster of Hyde Park Theater. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to stage presence players. And with stage presence players, we have a great group of folks here. I want to make sure I have my right notes here. So let's start with the artistic director, Christy Treitler.
Hello.
Hello. And then assistant artistic director, TJ Condit.
Hi there.
And also assistant artistic director, Jonathan Spear.
Hello.
Actress Lisa Page.
Hola.
Hola. Jerry Giuliano as well.
¿Cómo estás?
Ah, muy bien. So y'all are performing Almost Maine, which is a lovely show. Somebody tell us about it.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Jonathan, tell us about it.
It's a grouping of vignettes. There's 9 stories dealing with various aspects of being in different states of love, falling in, falling out, trying to stay in, trying to get out. And they're poignant, they're fun. There's a lot of little kind of literary devices that the author tries to bring to life. He's actually in, what is it, Something Rotten now? I think he's one of the leads.
Who's the author?
John Cariani, I think. I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but I think he's one of the leads in Something Rotten, which is a great show.
Did you see it when it was here?
I did not, and my kids beat me every day for not taking them to see it.
Yeah, and they should.
Tolerate that from children.
Well, at least they have good taste. But the show is great. He wrote the vignettes all as like audition pieces, like way back, and then he turned it into a play, and the play like flopped when it came out. It was like not
didn't do well. Ran for a couple of months.
Yeah, and then but now it's like I think it. I read somewhere like it outsells Shakespeare as far as the most produced. Play or
in communities,
riots.
Yeah,
among community theater and high schools and stuff like that.
What is the significance of the title?
Almost Maine is actually a physical, well, it's an imaginary location, but it's a location, a city, a small rural community that didn't actually form a city. It's almost a city, as it were, is the joke in the show. And it's located in the far north part of Maine, and so it's very cold, very remote, very isolated. But the story's written to be, it could be anywhere, really.
So if you're like on I-95 and you're at the Buc-ee's 20 miles south of Almost Maine, you'd...
You gotta hang a couple of lefts. Yeah, you gotta hang a couple of lefts to get there. Absolutely, yeah. So
first of all, you'd be fine if you could find Buc-ee's in Maine. Everything would be okay.
Yes, you can find Buc-ee's in Maine. So you can find Buc-ee's everywhere. It's like back in the 70s, you used to find Stuckey's everywhere.
That's right. There's your Texas state. Yes, very good, Stuckey's.
But this is a benefit performance for stage present players. In each vignette is done by a different pair of people, correct?
So yeah.
You've got like 7,000 people in the cast.
Yeah, you can cast like four actors to do the whole show. You could probably even do it with just 3. But we decided to go with 19, one because we just know so many great actors, and we're pulling people from as far as Killeen, Austin, Georgetown, and everywhere, and got all these talent together to do all these vignettes. And it was easy to schedule that way, too, because it was like, okay, what night can you guys meet? So it was easy logistically for us, and that cut our costs. And we're trying to raise money.
That's all it's about.
Yeah, well, bringing a great show, if you can get, you know, a bunch of great actors together to come out and do it, you just broaden your appeal to the audience. And we really got some great pairings out there, and they worked really good. And only having to do one scene, it's so intense. We were on the same schedule, but they only had to learn one scene as opposed to learning five or six entrances or five or six scenes. So it was really strong stuff each time.
So not only are – so you three are associate artistic directors, but you're also in the show. So why don't we just go down the line and tell us what you play. So Lisa, what role do you play?
I play Gail. She's been with Lindell for quite a long time, and she's ready for the next step.
Oh.
And he doesn't seem quite ready, and she's frustrated with that. So she's like, you know what? I'm finished. But you find out.
Lindell's been that way all
the
time.
Yeah, Lindell's a slow starter, but he loves her.
And TJ, you're playing Lindell?
I do.
Jerry, sorry, you're playing Lindell?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I play Lindell. You know, he's a typical guy. He thinks
what's
everything's
wrong with
fine,
you?
You know? He's like, hey, she comes around. She's, you know, he's caught off left field. When
you have to learn what side your bread is buttered on.
That's right. That's right. It's been a long time.
And Jonathan, who do you play?
I play Man. How clever a title is that? And he has his paramour is a woman that showed up out of the blue and is missing her lost love 40 years after the lost love asked her to get married. And she didn't tell him yes or no. And so now she's come back to rectify that. And Man is answering the door to this woman that's all hyped up about this situation. So.
And Christy?
I play Jeanette. She's in the beginning and then at the end. So we open with us and then we end. And I'm in a new relationship with my guy, who's actually Jeff Davis is my partner. And
from Agape Theater. Great company.
Yeah.
And it's the first time that she says that she loves him. And he has an interesting answer.
Reaction?
Yes.
You can't trust Jeff Davis.
No.
I'm just saying. And TJ, what do you play?
He's a great guy.
I play the character Phil, and I'm teamed up with a wonderful actress by the name of Jen Martin.
Uh-huh.
And we're that couple that's sort of falling apart. It's that relationship that just doesn't work anymore. So it's a really poignant scene about this couple as they're literally disintegrating.
Okay, Jonathan, who is your partner? What's the actress that plays your
Judith Sloan is my partner there. She's been with the stage presence probably about four or five shows.
She's been the longest with me.
Yes,
awesome.
And so she's very veteran. She does a lot of film work, small film work here in town. So
great. So you guys are going to do a scene, are you not?
We have Lindell and Gail here ready to give
Lisa,
some insight.
Set the scene up for us.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Lindell.
Okay, Gail, I'm coming.
Lindell!
Hey, come on, I'm coming already.
Lindell?
What's the matter? What's going on? What?
I want it back.
What?
I want it back.
You want what back?
All the love I gave to you, I want it back.
What?
Now.
I don't understand.
I've got yours in the car.
You got what in the car?
All the love you gave to me. I've got it in the car.
What are you talking about?
I don't want it anymore.
Why?
I've made a decision. We're done.
What?
We're done. I've decided. And so I've brought all the love you gave to me back to you. It's the right thing to do.
Well, I...
It's in the car.
You said.
You can get it or I can get it for you.
Well, I don't want it back. Well, I don't need it.
Well, I don't want it. What am I supposed to do with all of it now? Now that I don't want it.
Well, I don't know.
Well, under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances, Gail.
Keep it, so I'm
under what
give it back.
Circumstances? I don't understand. What are you doing?
I told you, I'm getting all the love you gave to me, and I'm giving it back to you.
Well, I don't think I want it. Whoa. Need help?
Nope. I've got it. It's not heavy.
Oh, awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, we're all just out of time. So you're playing this weekend and this weekend only up in Georgetown, correct? At the Premium Blend School of Performing Arts.
Yes.
Where can folks go to get more information?
They can see our Facebook page at Stage Presence Players.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Christy Treitler, Jerry Giuliano, Lisa Page, TJ Condit, and Jonathan Spear of Stage Presence Players production of Almost Maine, playing this weekend at a Premium Blend School of Performing Arts up in Georgetown. For more information, search Stage Presence Players on Facebook. We will be right back. Back.
Mainly I do like Maine.
When the sun goes down, the kids are up and out.
Okay, I wasn't going to play that song because we don't have time, but I just had to.
It's kind of
you
amazing.
You had to, yeah.
It is cute. So we're like plumb out of time. Thank you guys. I'm so happy to have the band back together.
Woo-hoo!
We're like bad sorority sisters.
We're the best. Uh-oh, I just destroyed my microphone. Well, remember, folks, you can...
Oh, my God, Nick's mouth's on the ground. We can fix it. It's okay.
You can like us on Facebook. You can tweet us on Twitter. You can get us right in your mailbox, can't you?
Yes, you can.
All you have to do is go to...
offstageonair.com
and enter your information in the box in the right up right corner
and we'll just arrive
in your mailbox.
Alright,
so stick around for Backstage at Offstage if you're listening on the podcast. If you're listening on the terrestrial, Austin Monitor News is next. So I'm just going to run away and we're going to listen to a little bit of that podcast musical.
Woo!
One thing, I came out here for one thing. And that little bitty one.
Well, the curtain has just come down on I Speak Spanish, the musical.
See!
The house was really with us today. The cast is all pumped up and raring to go. And they are busy dressing. And we have gone out the stage door, down the stairs, and we're sitting in the puddles of unnamed liquid next to the dumpsters.
Oh,
is that
backstage.
The smell?
Is that what we're calling it?
That's what that is. And I appreciate your patience in dealing with that. So here backstage, we have all the stage present players, folks. We have Christy Treitler.
Hello.
Right into the microphone. Thank you. We have Lisa Page.
Hola.
We have Jonathan Spear.
Hello.
I can't see who's next, so I'm just going to say TJ Condit.
Hi there.
Yeah, you're hiding behind that microphone. And Jerry Giuliano.
Good day.
And of course, we have Nicole.
Hello.
We never say hello to Nicole.
No, well.
Poor Nicole's,
you know what? Hello,
Nicole. Feeling put upon today.
Hi, Nicole.
We never say hello to you. Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
So
hi,
nice
Lisa.
To be here. Okay. Well, that's all the time
that.
We have.
One big happy family.
It was like romper room. Have you been a groupie?
Christy, you've been backstage before.
I have.
You have. So let me just start with you, and anybody can answer this if you want to, because it's a good question. So, I think it's only good because I say it, but I want to hear, you know we heard, counts. We know why, how you got into theater. We know where you grew up, but I want to know what passions you hold, what holds your interest outside of theater.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. So my other passion actually are children and babies, and I'm actually a part-time nanny for a beautiful little 4-month-old baby boy right now.
Named?
Dax.
Shout out to Dax.
That's a great name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank
you. Is that short for anything? I must know.
His dad's name is David, but they didn't want to call him David, so they just decided on Dax.
Oh, okay.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
Or as Lisa would say, David.
There you go.
See.
Well, now you have your own children, do you not?
I have one. He's not a child anymore. He's 18 and leaving in 4 days for the Army.
He's going to serve our country, and that's it's a wonderful and
yes, please tell him thank you, because I couldn't do it.
But so you are packing him off, or you packed him off?
No, he's already packed, and he takes the bus and the plane out to his first station where he's going to do basic at Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Mm. Well, that's are you sad? Are you happy? What are you?
I'm a little bit of
my
both.
My kid's leaving.
I'm a little bit of both. Some days I'm like, no, and then other days when he's just driving me insane, I'm like, bye.
So you guys will be empty nesters.
We will be.
Well, that's going to be interesting. You looking forward to that?
Yes, we are. We're not slaves to the school district calendar anymore. We can go on vacation whenever we want.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Slaves to the school district calendar. Exactly.
So does everybody here? So are we? Does everybody here live up north in Georgetown area?
Colleen.
Right into the microphone.
Yeah, Colleen. Yes. Now Colleen. Pray for me.
More, Del Valle. Oh, you're in the other direction.
Right.
I was like, yeah, you wait a minute. That's opposite. Yeah.
That's a long
Georgetown's
trip.
Georgetown's kind of a central point, and we pull from all directions to get people there.
So. Yeah. Lisa, what are you doing in Colleen?
I am prior military.
Pull that microphone to you.
Pull it to me. Okay. Yeah. I am prior military, but now I work for Dell full time, and theater is like my hobby, passion kind of thing I do on the side. And,
You have that great theater in Colleen.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so do you do stuff there?
The theater's closing in Killeen, actually, when you say that.
Yeah.
That beautiful little theater
is closing?
What?
The Beautiful Arts is closing. Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Wait
a minute.
I could
spend the next hour talking with you about it.
Well,
but,
let's spend 5 minutes. What's going on?
Yeah, but wait, why?
Well, that's the big issue. Nobody knows why, really. The board got together and came to the rehearsing right now, The Little Mermaid there, their final show for the season. They show up at the rehearsals on Thursday night, and they say, this will be our last show. We're closing our doors, and then the issue. Issued a full quarter page ad in the newspaper the next day, which is like an official notice that our 501 is closing, kind of a thing. You know, come see our last show. And that was what the ad said. And so they just said they're closed. So now people have been like, well, why? What's going on? Because they're not in financial trouble. They, you know, all theaters struggle and have issues, but they certainly weren't out of money or in debt in any way. And so they were very confused as to why it's closing.
Do they own that building? Because that building.
The building should be almost paid off, if not. It pays a dollar lease, I believe, is the lease terms with the city. And their city taxes go to help fund it. I mean, other people will line up to take that tax money, but you know that there's money allocated. So the city was even surprised that the theater was closing because they're like, well, we have money earmarked and we're in bad situation ourselves, you know, but we have to spend the money on the arts. And so everyone's surprised and nobody knows why.
I mean, that space, I did a show there.
Beautiful space.
I played Little Red. I did Into the Woods there.
Yeah. And there's.
I'm blown away. I'm like, I can't believe this space. And Killeen, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, and it opens to everything. I mean, they had a poetry slam there for the high school kids to come and do it. They do all kinds of musical things there in the community, fundraisers and stuff like that. So it's a multi-purpose facility, holds 400 people. It's sure it's showing a little bit of age, but it's a fantastic facility, and it's a shame that's going to be lost. But there's some discrepancy on whether the bylaws were followed to close the place. There's things going on, so they're trying to figure out exactly if it really is going to close. So it's not a done deal, but it's on
the
best doorstep.
Wow, that's big news, and it's breaking right here on Offstage and on the Air.
Because we're hard-hitting journalists,
yes,
Lisa.
Yes.
We are hard-hitting journalists.
So get people out there. Get people involved. Get the theater community in Austin. Be like, hey, Killeen, what the heck is going on? You guys can't close down.
Yeah, Killeen, what the hell?
Yeah.
So have you performed in that theater, Lisa?
No, I never have, and that's why I was telling John that, you know, now that I'm kind of getting into more of the theater scene in Killeen and Georgetown and Leander, that my heart is breaking because there's not a lot of culture in Killeen, and that's my biggest complaint, which is why I kind of went out to find a theater group, and now, you know, this thing I found out about Beville Arts, and I'm like, I'm fighting. I want to fight with him tooth and nail to keep it open.
Yeah, I mean, they even do a free show for the military families, their reserve group families. And they do that free for every show. And, it serves a purpose of being a dress rehearsal in a way for the cast group. But it's a full-on show, and that's free to those families. And sometimes, you know, that's just great for the community to be able to come together.
Well, it's
and
not on their website. They're showing auditions in August for Honk.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Well, yes, I mean, so, management has been an issue with their PR and promotion, and they haven't made any financial changes to their plans or their promotional thing. So
they should
hire
Nicole and I to take it over.
Hey, they want somebody. Yeah, if you want to do it, I will put your name forward.
Come on up.
So back to Lisa. When did you start? When was the first time you did theater? Did you do theater as a kid?
No, I started actually a few years ago in a local church in Killeen, Christian House of Prayer, under the tutelage of Carrie Ann Zamore. She has a production company right now in Central Texas. I kind of started out with her doing some church.
I've had her graham cracker snacks.
Okay. Quite delicious.
Campfire girls.
Yeah, but I started out with her and then kind of took a break, and then I met Christy. I saw Stage Presence Players, and I literally inboxed her one night in the middle of the night, and we just started talking back and forth, and here I am.
Wow.
And she's
awesome.
In another play with me. We're in another play together as well in Leander.
Awesome.
Now.
Yeah, way off Broadway production.
We like the way off Broadway players.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Jonathan, what's your story? Where'd you grow up?
I'm a Texas native, and I grew up in Houston and moved to East Texas for a number of years, and then went to Austin for University of Texas. And my wife and I now live in Killeen. I got into acting about 5 or 6 years ago because I was driving the kids to all these auditions and shows. They've been doing them since they were 5 or 6, and they're like 17 now. And then one day, my daughter looked at me in the eyes and said, "Dad, you come audition too." And I got addicted.
He's not kidding. He's addicted.
You got bitten by the bug late in life.
In
but
6 years,
bitten.
I've done 30 shows. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That's a lot of shows.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's
your castmates are over here going, huh?
Oh.
Like, you know.
Yeah, so that's 5 a year, so think about that.
So, Jerry, what's your story?
I've been doing theater on and off for a number of years, really since I was about 13.
10 years ago?
Yes. Yeah. I love this
give
woman.
Or take
yes,
a few. Hey. Give or take a few.
What are you doing later? So
Lisa's over there getting a little hot and she's like, wait, whoa.
Wait a minute, Lindo. Wait, Lindo. Wait, Lindo. Give me that ring first.
Keep it a family show, folks. I did stand-up comedy for a while in the 80s, toured.
That was like prime comedy time.
You've been watching this.
You did radio, too, now out in with I've who? Tell us who. Time. Come on, drop names.
all right, so when I did comedy, well, let's go back
okay,
a little.
Okay, yeah, now the truth comes out.
We're going to drop names if you went there. I started out, I toured at David Spade. This was late 80s, early 90s. Tried out for Saturday Night Live. Didn't make it. Tried out with Spade, actually.
Wow.
He made it.
To get in, that's great.
I did radio, starting in the early 90s and through the mid-90s. But I started in Phoenix at a station that's not there anymore, Y95, and it was a...
Why?
Because I had nothing better to do, and I had to pay alimony. So, you know, the morning zoo. And it's just, you know... It's just always been a hobby. It's in the blood. You love it. Kind of like Jonathan. You know, I've done some shows with Jonathan and Colleen. And so, you know, this is just a no-brainer. It's what we love to do.
So what? Yeah. So I want to talk about, I've always thought that people that do stand-up are the bravest people. We talked about this last week. Because in every other performing arts, the audience is always on your side. They are rooting for you to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stand-up is exactly the opposite. Yep. They want to watch you fail. They're waiting for you to prove it.
Yeah.
So what brought you, what made you make that step to get up on stage and do stand-up?
I just, I like laughter. I love making people laugh. And I just found out I had a knack for it when I was a kid because I was kind of an awkward kid. So it was always I was always the one the bully was going to beat up or take the lunch money from. And I found out pretty quick, man, if you can make them laugh, they won't beat you up.
That's it. Right? That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in New Orleans.
Louisiana or the other one?
No, Louisiana.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be very clear here on the show.
So, yeah. So, you know... It took a lot.
You made your living as a stand-up comic for a little while.
For a little while, yeah.
Awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
Not many people can say that.
Yeah. It's a tough gig. You know.
Have you or anybody else here watched the new TV series on Showtime about stand-up comics? Call them Dine Up Here?
I have not.
No.
Well, there you go. There's your homework.
Something to binge watch.
Every time I turn on, I end up flipping on one of those channels, it's always the very end. And I'm like, well that doesn't help me watch the episode.
I T-vote it. The jury's out, as far as I'm concerned.
We'll just come to your house.
We should.
Popcorn,
snacks, everything.
There you go, hot tub.
At Lisa's. I'm on my way.
We got it.
She does.
All
she has
for
a
it.
Oh, you got rid of the jacuzzi.
I got rid of the jacuzzi, yes.
What's a jacuzzi?
If you're having a cocktail in the hot tub, it's a jacuzzi.
Okay. Right.
Okay, so TJ, what's your story?
Educating the public here on radio.
Thanks, Nick, for the heads up.
There you go.
A la my cousin Robert came up with that one.
Jacuzzi. I love it.
I started off with the Kaleidoscope Company at the Permian Playhouse in Odessa, Texas, back in the 80s.
Okay.
I've been on stage pretty much ever since then.
You're not on stage right now.
I'm always on stage in my
mind. Yeah, all the world's a stage. Nicole.
That's right.
Sorry. So you've been on stage since you were a little kid.
Since I was a teenager, about 13, 14.
What got you there? Did you grow up in Odessa?
For the most part, yeah, I was an army brat early on, then
and now you're just a brat,
A brat, complete brat, absolutely. But it was a lot. I always enjoyed entertaining, getting in front of people, just making a fool out of myself and having a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a play one time and I said, I got to do that.
Mm-hmm. What play was that? Do you remember?
I think it was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Close every door to me.
We are full circle now.
You guys are all doing straight plays. Anybody here do musicals?
I have done musicals from time to time.
We don't with our company, but
me.
You got to speak in the microphone.
Couple, but it's,
we don't with stage bad. Presence. Stage players
yeah,
right
but
now,
I was talking about you individually.
Like in general,
I'm not a big musical fan.
What? Oh,
I know.
My God, you must leave.
I know. I can't.
Don't
I can't do
that.
Too
what
much.
Don't you like about
you
musicals?
Think that, but don't say it.
The music. You know, it's just after a while. Wait, you know, it's like. Okay.
But what musicals have you seen?
I mean.
Because you could have been tortured. There are a few.
Chicago.
Oh, well, okay. No, that's just wrong. Those are yeah, the greatest.
Those, okay. So, you know,
that's
like,
Candor and Ebb.
That's Candor and Ebb.
You can't
so,
diss Candor and Ebb.
Okay, but
her.
I'm just saying, you know, it's just after a while, it's like, I just want to hear the acting. I want to hear the talking, the emotion. I'm okay with some songs.
It's okay,
I know.
Though. Some people
I'm about
are
to get
not
kicked out
musicals.
Of the studio, right?
But Jerry's dying to say something. What do you want to say?
I'll just say, I love musicals. You just don't want me to be in them.
Right? Yeah,
nobody
yeah,
needs
it.
To hear me sing.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it exactly.
Yeah. My director said that I have a paint peeling voice uh-oh. During my audition. And I looked at him being new to the craft, and I was like, "Is that a compliment?" You know? He's like, so "Yes, you're loud." That's what that means. That
Jonathan, what musicals have you done?
Let's see. I did Pajama Game. I've done Hairspray. I've done Young Frankenstein. I've done Shrek the Musical.
Were you okay. Over at Georgetown?
No, I have not cracked the palace yet. Okay. I've not auditioned there yet. I've worked in Georgetown with Christie's group and been staged there. But I want to do the palace, and I nearly tried out for Young Frankenstein. And but didn't do it. My daughter is stage managed there, and she stage managed the children's theater. So she says, "Yeah, go do it, Dad. You've got the chops." So.
Yeah, Dad, do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so. What? I bet you would like jukebox musicals because it tells the story of like the music you know, like
that's
Motown
right.
The
now,
musical,
that is true. That
a
is
Jersey
true.
Boy,
there
because
you go.
The music makes
things
sense
there,
to you.
There you go, exactly. There
see?
You go.
And yeah, totally
see, those,
right.
Though, and yet those
okay,
are
so
not.
So now
true.
I'm redeemed. Am I allowed to stay now? Yeah, am I allowed to stay?
We're not going to kick you out.
Tying into stuff that y'all talked about earlier too.
Only because you're the only Spanish speaker.
Oh,
that we
okay,
have
okay.
Here.
The lead in Rock of Ages right now. I worked with him in Laughter on the 23rd Floor over at City Theater. He actually was a member of the Blue Man Group at one time.
Oh, wow.
So yeah,
okay.
So he's,
keep, we keep going full circle.
I know. We just yeah. All yeah. In tying it together.
So if you were to audition for a musical, what musical would you want to audition for? If you could like say Georgetown Palace is going to be doing a musical that I want to be in, and it is.
Well, you know, I'm great in musicals, but I'm not a great singer. So you know. there's like a part that, oh, we need a really good character, but he doesn't have to sing. I'm the
maybe
first person.
Maybe it's My Fair Lady.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, but, you know, I was just telling Giuliano over there, you know, there's Rocky the Musical, and I'd love to do Burgess Meredith's Mickey character. That'd be
my
awesome.
My nose ain't broken.
But hey, my nose ain't broken.
Yeah. Dude, I love that musical. You know, we call that Rocky Das Musical.
You know,
you may have a problem because you need to have a full-size regulation boxing ring yeah. Come out in order for it to work.
But yeah, you know, something like that would be a hoot to do. And,
okay, Rocky Das Musical.
Oh
that's the one it is.
I so want Rocky Das Musical to come here. You have no idea.
Let's hear those dulcet tones
it.
Again,
yeah.
Nicole.
Let's
yeah,
that.
I know. Go, Nicole.
Sing that song again.
No, that's okay. You can play Andy Crawl. Listen, Andy Crawl singing it right now.
All right, you guys. Well, thank you for joining us backstage. It's very brave of you guys.
So glad to be here.
Good luck with the fundraiser. Oh, one quick thing. We're not under the same rules. Do you want to tell people how much it costs to go to see the fundraiser?
It costs $10.
$10 to go see it to support Stage Presence Players, one of our newer production companies here in town, and that is showing themselves to be pretty stable and sticking around.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Awesome.
Well, ain't that news? Got something more than some black and blues. At least I can say for once I didn't lose. But hey, hey, hey. No one on the street.